Hello, and thank you for downloading Witness from the BBC World Service. It's 25 years since violence broke out in the city of Sumgait in Azerbaijan. At least 26 ethnic Armenians were killed during 3 days of rioting in the Soviet state. Louise Hidalgo reports.
It's the beginning of March 1988, and cracks are beginning to appear in the Soviet Union. Far from Moscow, old hatreds are stirring, and images of Soviet citizens in a distant republic sobbing and telling stories of ethnic violence burst for the first time onto people's televisions.
Good evening. 31 people were killed last Sunday in ethnic riots in the southern Soviet Republic of Azerbaijan. The death toll, far greater than had been previously admitted, was revealed this afternoon by the Soviet news agency TASS. It said that old men and women were among the dead, and what it called the hooligan elements responsible had been arrested.
The first notice we had of it was when it came clacking over the TASS newswire. It said there had been rioting in this place called Sumgait, which is down in the oil and gas region of Azerbaijan.
Bill Keller was the New York Times correspondent in Moscow.
TASS used what for the time was remarkably strong language. They described it as a rampage by a group of hooligans. And then, of course, they said the situation was under control and there was no explanation of what exactly the rioting was about.
After a week of caution, Soviet television tonight gave its first account of the extent of the violence. TASS stressed that members of several nationalities had died, and it's assumed here that there's been bitter racial clashes between Armenians and Azerbaijanis. Armenia and Azerbaijan are two republics in the south of the Soviet Union, inhabited by people of different races and religions. There have been massive but peaceful demonstrations in Armenia calling for the return of an Armenian-populated region now controlled by Azerbaijan. Last Sunday, an official report admitted there had been disturbances in the disputed territory, and two Azerbaijanis, had died.
News of those killings and the arrival of the first Azeri refugees from the small mountainous enclave of Nagorno-Karabakh, whose politicians had voted to leave Azerbaijan and join Armenia, were the spark for the events in Sumgait. But even today, 25 years on, what took place during those 3 days is bitterly disputed.
Most of what we were hearing was translated through people who had a point of view. And so along with factual information, we were getting a fair amount of rumor and gossip and hyperbole and finger-pointing. And if you suggested to an Armenian that 30 or 40 people had died in Sumgait, they would treat you as if you had been brainwashed by Soviet propaganda, because everybody knew it was hundreds who had been slaughtered in the streets. And yes, there were these stories that are kind of a staple of pogrom stories, of Azerbaijanis going through the maternity ward of the Sumgait hospital, hunting down Armenian mothers and throwing their infants out the window.
The trouble began on the 26th of February, when a small group of demonstrators gathered on Sumgait's main square to protest about the situation in Karabakh. Sumgait was a big, ethnically mixed city, but the Armenians tended to be more well-to-do, while many of the Azeris were industrial workers living in overcrowded apartment blocks. When, the next night, the Soviet military prosecutor announced on television that the two young Azeri men had been killed near Karabakh, it was like putting a match to a tinderbox, as this Sumgait Armenian described in an interview with the British writer Tom Duval.
You know how bees sound? Have you heard how they buzz? It was like the buzzing of millions of bees. And with this buzzing, they flew into our courtyard, howling and shouting.
Gangs of mainly Azeri youths began to roam the city, looking for Armenians, smashing windows, burning cars, looting houses, raping women. It was a full day before Moscow acted. The deputy head of the KGB happened to be in the region, and he and his deputy, Grigory Charchenko, were ordered to Sumgait. Grigory Charchenko has never forgotten what he saw.
The whole town was in panic. Crowds of Azeris were walking around. There was screaming coming from the courtyards. Help! Help! We had an escort, and we were led to one place. I don't want to show you the photographs. I destroyed them. But with my own eyes, I saw dismembered corpses. A body that had been mutilated with an axe, legs, arms. There was practically no body left. They took dry leaves off the ground and scattered them over the corpses, and then got some petrol from the nearest car and set fire to them.
Later that same night, the first Soviet troops arrived to try to restore order. They were met by a furious mob of young Azeris armed with Molotov cocktails, and it took another 24 hours for the gangs to be chased from the streets and for a curfew to be imposed, something then unprecedented in the Soviet Union. Back in Moscow, Bill Keller was frantically trying to get permission to go to Azerbaijan to see for himself what was happening.
At that time, foreign correspondents were still obliged to get permission to get on an airplane to anywhere in the Soviet Union. Things were beginning to loosen up a bit, but Azerbaijan, Armenia were both completely off limits, and our requests were turned down one after the other until about 6 months had passed, and then they said, you can go.
By then, of course, the streets of Sumgayit had been cleared of the burnt-out cars and the debris that those 3 frenzied days of rioting had left behind. But the emotional legacy was still raw. In this city where Armenians and Azeris had lived together, worked together, even intermarried.
A lot of people had stories of being absolutely terrified, listening to the sounds of mobs coming down the street, smashing windows, yelling anti-Armenian slogans, dragging Armenians from their cars and setting them alight, beating them. But you also heard stories from a lot of people of Azerbaijanis who took in their Armenian neighbors. Albert Mehmedov, who had brought all of his Armenian neighbors in, gathered the children and locked the door while the worst of the rioting was going on. And I went to the hospital, of course, the maternity ward, where I talked to a number of people who said that, no, the throwing the infants out the window stuff never really happened. I heard that from several people, including an Armenian nurse. But even 6 months later, there was a lot of fear. The Azerbaijanis blamed the Armenians. The Armenians blamed the Azerbaijanis. Just from the official numbers, it was clear that the Armenians had been at the receiving end of this. The official tally was that 26 Armenians had died and 6 Azerbaijanis. And all of the people they had arrested, there were 30-something of them, were Azerbaijanis. In fact, when I arrived, the first of them had been convicted of murder and sentenced. If what the authorities had hoped to show by letting me go there was that they had restored law and order, then they were successful. The city was quiet. There were dozens of prosecutions underway. The damage had been mopped up. But if they wanted to show that this sort of ethnic tinderbox had been defused, there they failed, because there was still a lot of fear and a lot of bitterness and a lot of blame on both sides.
And can you remember how you felt leaving Sumgayit? Did you feel this was a blip and although things will never be quite the same again in Sumgayit, the violence has been contained? Or did you go away with a sense of foreboding or pessimism?
Oh, I certainly went away with a sense of foreboding. I would never claim that in August of 1988 I saw the dissolution of the Soviet Union coming, but it was clear that this was far from over. I think Sumgayit, for a lot of Soviets in particular, was a sort of alarm bell going off, a sense that what they had been taught in school about the peace and harmony of the proletariat in the great Soviet Union was maybe not all so peaceful and harmonious.
3 years later, the Soviet Union had gone. That same year, 1991, Azerbaijan and Armenia went to war. 3,000 people would die and 1 million were left homeless in the battle for Nagorno-Karabakh. The countries are still bitter foes.
Louise Hidalgo. For details of our complete range of downloads and our terms of use, go to bbcworldservice.com/podcasts.